Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Welcome into Patriots Playbook for the final time of the 2014/15 football season. I'm John Rook. Eric Scalavino from PFW will stick around for a little while here. This is our normal run-of-the-mill type of regular season program, but as many of you know, during the course of the last 14 years now that we've been on the air with this program, we always wrap it up at the end of the season whenever the end comes. And this is just the fourth time now in 14 years that we've actually had a win to end the season to talk about. Normally it's after defeat, everybody's bummed, and we just kind of slowly slide into the off season and look forward to the next year and, you know, the combine and the OTAs and everything that comes out. And this year, there's a different feel. There's definitely a different feel. Yes, you won the Super Bowl, and that's fantastic. And I want to talk to as many of you on the program today as we possibly can to get your thoughts on the game, to get your thoughts on the aftermath, to get your thoughts on what this team should do for next year. We'll try to be all-encompassing as much as we humanly possibly can over the next 2 hours. But I also want to tell you that we've got a very special announcement about the playbook.
What's that?
I'm hearing
this for the first time.
For the first time, yeah. Yes, and this is the first time we've done it, but it's because of the interest of the team and the interest in the organization and really the interest in football year-round now. We're going to have special monthly editions during the offseason of the Patriots playbook. During the off season, so we will do a show in March, a show in April, a show in May, a show in June, a show in July, and a show in August before the regular season starts again in September.
Get out of town.
Yeah, so we'll do 6 monthly magazine playbook shows during the off season. We'll pick a day in the month. We'll schedule guests. Russell Baxter will be with us. And by the way, Russell will be here in the second hour of the program today to sort of sign off on the on this current football season. But we'll also, you know, talk about the news at hand, not only with the Patriots, but also about news that's going on around the NFL. And we'll do it. We'll pick a day once a month, and we'll publicize it here on the website and send it out through social media to let you know of the exact day. But I'm really happy about that. And Fred wants to do it, and I want to do it, and Kevin wants to do it. And so we're going to do it. So we'll
awesome.
Have an off-season edition of the Patriots playbook starting next month.
That's great news.
How about that? Not quite, you know, the twice weekly version that, you know, you PFW guys put together. But you know what? We just decided that, you know, we need to have a little less of a good thing, and then it'll stay a good thing, you know?
Well, you got to stay relevant, too. You keep people, you know, at the forefront of their minds. Not
absolutely.
Not in the back.
No.
The back burner.
No, and so I think that's just enough to sort of whet the appetite and bring you up to date on things. And I realize that even football fans get off and do other things during the spring and summer months. A lot of people follow baseball, for instance. That's one thing. A lot of people take vacations. A lot of people try to put football a little on the back burner. But this is just enough out there to kind of keep you, I don't know, interested in, and keep you pulled in a little. And to, if you can't make anything else or can't do anything else, then you can find out when our monthly playbook edition is going to be. And then hopefully you're caught all up to date and you'll come back the next month for training camp and the like. So it's the first time that we've done this.
It's going to be a quick offseason,
yeah,
too.
I have a feeling
having,
it will be.
Having gone to the Super Bowl,
yeah,
it always makes the offseason that much
agreed
shorter or quicker, however you want to describe it. But, yeah, it's going to be time for football again very soon. So don't you worry.
Well, you know, we got the combine coming up in just a couple of weeks, right?
2 weeks.
Yeah. 2 weeks away.
Yeah.
So I know that'll be something that you guys will be dealing with quite, you know, extensively.
We've got the combine in 2 weeks.
Right.
And then about 6 weeks from now, we've got owners meetings.
Owners meetings, yep.
Then we've got all our draft and free agent prep to do
and right,
and somewhere in there we got to sneak a trip to the White House in.
Yeah, that's,
I don't know exactly
kinda,
when.
That's kind of cool,
but that's going to be fun.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
And I'm sure there'll be a ring presentation mm-hmm. ceremony of some mm-hmm. sort.
Of course,
that we'll have to cover. So it's going to be a fun offseason. It's going to be the most fun offseason that I've ever covered as part of this team because of all of these.
Yeah, because
these
won. I mean, right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly, because this team won. They won a Super Bowl. And that's largely going to be our modus operandi today here in the our last regular season edition of the Playbook. By the way, before we go any further, thank you to all the new Twitter followers and the Facebook friends.
Did you make it to the goal?
I made it to the 3K goal.
Nice.
So, you know, now I feel like I'm relevant in the Twitterverse. I'm not a complete schmuck.
You randomly picked the number 3,000?
I just thought that sounded, you know, first of all, it sounded better than 2K. It sounds to me that that's at least representative, like, you know, you actually tried, you know.
Is it like the number of hits in baseball?
Yeah, maybe. 3,000 hits.
Was that Bernie Mac was in that?
Bernie Mac, that's right. Mr. 3,000, right?
Yeah.
So I just felt like that there's a degree of relevancy. Now, you know, it'd be great by this time next year to say that I'm up to 4K. So that'll be the next goal.
Sure.
You know, right? We'll try to work on that. But thank you to the new followers. I'll try not to let you down. I'll try not to fill your, you know, Twitter feed with a lot of garbage. It'll be good stuff, as you know, that, you know, I like to retweet a lot of things that I see not only around the Patriots but also around the NFL. And being the college basketball, you know, broadcaster and aficionado that I am, as well as college football, then I also share mostly those items on my Twitter feed as well.
Can I interrupt you for some?
You may.
Breaking news.
Go.
So to speak.
Go.
For those of you who are in the area.
Yeah.
And are available this weekend, Saturday from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. If you can make it up to Foxborough at the hall at Patriot Place, you will be able to see the brand new Vince Lombardi Trophy.
Sweet. All four of them together, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, and the brand new one, which is now finding its home here in Foxborough, will be there for you to see and, I assume, to take pictures
with. Take pictures with?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, we just got that official notification from the administrators of the hall that we can begin announcing and promoting that. So that's this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, starting at 10 a.m. both days.
Fantastic.
You can get to the hall and see the brand new Vince Lombardi Trophy.
Fantastic. Love it. All right, so which duck boat were you on?
None of them.
Oh, that's right.
You were here doing the show, right?
Which duck boat would you have been on?
If you could have chosen one. Well, I was invited to be on the media boat.
Right.
By the PR staff. Right. And I elected not to do that.
No?
No. I am very much looking forward, though, to going to Washington, D.C. whenever the team goes down there.
That'll be fun.
Fred and I are going to make that happen.
That'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for that.
And I did a lot of radio hits all over the country, mm-hmm. you know, with people that I know in the business talking about the big game leading up to it and then in the aftermath of it. And I did some local television as an analyst as well, you know, for the big game, even though I didn't get to travel to Arizona because, as you well know, as the case has been in each of my previous 22 seasons with the Patriots, I always have college basketball that interferes.
Yeah.
And if you don't do the games, you don't get paid for the games. That's the way it works here. This isn't, you know, a salaried basis, unfortunately, in my world.
Yeah.
But, you know, I managed to, you know, watch the game with Miss Robin at home. By the way, there's more cranberry bread in there.
Is there really?
She made another cranberry
bread.
An end of season
Super Bowl edition
bread.
Of cranberry
yes,
bread?
She did.
Yes.
And you notice I waited until everybody had left before I only told you and Kevin.
I did notice that because it would have been gone by now.
Okay. Yeah. It would have been gone. Fred would have gone in there and taken a fistful of it.
Mm.
Andy would have taken
Sucking
the
his
other
rubby
fistful.
Fingers
yeah,
in there.
Basically. That's exactly. And it would totally tarnished it for everybody else. So that's for a little bit later on. But
okay.
I watched the game with Robin at home, and then I had to go into the TV studio to do the mm-hmm. analyzation, if you will,
yep.
after it was all said and done. I found myself with my mouth open for most of the second half. Now, I guess my jaw dropped a little on that end of the first half drive. You know, we always, you know, on our Nitpick
Which
Tuesday
one?
Shows.
Seattle's or no,
Seattle's into the yeah. first half drive.
Yeah, it was pretty.
Where they scored in half
a
minute.
Seconds.
In 30 seconds.
Oh,
and I thought that was one of the most horrific, egregious errors in judgment and strategy I have ever seen, and in performance that I had seen all season. I mean, that was as hideous a defensive series as the Patriots may have had all year.
Yeah, it was,
you know, and for them to overcome that and come back the way they did from the 10-point fourth quarter deficit to win, mm-hmm. and then to have Seattle almost do it again to them at the end of the fourth quarter. And the way that drive ended, I just literally, my jaw was on the floor of my living room for most of that second half.
It's almost fitting that they had to win the game the way they did. because it was sort of a, I guess it was representative of the kind of season that they had. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
It was emblematic of the way that
it was.
You know, starting off slowly the way they did and then coming back and then having just every game in the – to me, it was fitting. And it was almost fitting that they had to have the threat of losing the third one in order to make it even more special. I mean, scene of the crime from 2007, having a ridiculous catch in the final minute to set up the team, the opposing team, for the potential game-winning score. I mean, it was at the opposite end of the field from when it was last time. But, I mean, it was almost like watching a movie. And the script was almost too unbelievable.
Yeah.
And you're like, there's no way that could ever happen in real life.
Yeah. It's one of those, you know, scripts that Disney would reject for unbelievability. And they've got a few.
And they've got a few.
And they've had
a few.
Yes.
Right.
They have. Too fairy tale-ish. But I got over my initial shock. You know, I actually, you know, I watched a little of the halftime, you know, show, and I thought Katy Perry was okay. You know, I'm not a huge Katy Perry fan, unlike a couple of buddies of mine who are just, you know, absolutely gaga over, you know, them, and they're only 30 years older than she is.
Them?
Yeah, over. Oh, well. Is that a little
Freudian slip there?
Yes, it may have been. I didn't realize I said that until you just pointed it out. Where the hell is your head, Scalavino?
I know where I'd like it to be.
Yeah. Ooh, ba-dunch. Kevin's working in there, so we don't.
Nah, it's all right. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, there we go. I just, you know, I was dismissing the end of the first half, and I'm like, okay, you know, it's a tie game, and you didn't play well, or you didn't play as good as you could. You were left with a little bit of a sour taste in your mouth at halftime because
I thought they dominated the first half.
They did, but that last 30 seconds just killed the whole thing. And I'm thinking, all right, and the game is tied, and so my initial inclination was to think, oh, this bodes well for Seattle because they didn't really play well at all,
and
probably by their estimation,
they
and they were in the game. They were tied. Should have been behind it. Yeah. And so I said, so there's two different ways to look at it, and so I'm going to stay noncommittal here. I'm not going to jump off the ship. I'm not going to get overly concerned. I really want to see how they respond to the opening drive of the third quarter. And that didn't turn out too well either, which makes the Patriots' victory all the more remarkable because it kind of bucked the trend of everything you like to do in order to seize momentum. And let me say this. You know, the Patriots obviously lost the coin toss, and you know that my, you know, big, you know, nitpick all year long is, you know, always been deferring, and I understand why they do it. We don't have to get into all of this again. I get it. My preference would be to take the football. And had they taken the football to start this game and they set the tone and kept the ball, you know, and jumped the lead a little bit more, maybe things turn out a little bit differently. Maybe they don't have to sweat it out to the very end. Just saying. That's all I'm saying. I think it's a viable option. I think it's certainly a tool that a team can use, especially when you're on the road, especially when you're in a foreign stadium, when you're trying to take a crowd out of it. You would know this as well as anyone. That was a little like a Seattle home game, was it not?
Of course it was.
Okay. So you're basically going into an environment that's supposed to be 50-50, but it was not anything close to that.
No, it was conservatively it was 75-25.
Okay, and because of that, you should recognize that. You need to recognize that. And if you do a good enough job in recognizing that, I think you can help effectuate an advantage for yourself. But by ignoring it, I think is foolish. It's absolutely foolish, and I think that's one area where the Patriots missed the boat.
How so?
Because they didn't take the football to start the game.
Yeah, they did. Seattle won the toss.
Wait a second.
Seattle won the coin toss, John, and they deferred to the
they
second
did,
half.
Okay, they did defer. That's all right. My mistake. That's exactly.
New England
right.
had the ball.
They did take the ball,
and they actually moved it pretty well.
And moved it. Yes, they did. All right.
They ended up having to punt.
That's my mistake. I'm completely bass backwards. You know why? Because I'm thinking of the previous game. That's why. I totally confused that. Totally confused that. See, that's what happens when you're not in a routine here. I only do one show a week now in the last couple of weeks, and I'm kind of like, okay, I got to talk football today, you know, because I've had my head buried in basketball
in the last
36
Your
hours
Your head's
or
been
so.
Above the rim.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. But it still doesn't defeat my overall point. because I thought that by taking the football in this particular instance, they really didn't have a choice to, because Seattle did defer. So
yeah, they had no choice.
They had no choice but to take the football. That, you know, they did an adequate enough job to seize momentum. They completely blew it with end of the quarter drive.
Well, and they
into the second quarter.
Well,
drive.
They controlled the ball. They had time of possession was dominant, and were it not for Brady's poorly placed pass that got picked off on the goal line, the score might have been, they would have been up at least 3 points after, in the first quarter. And that might have changed things a little bit too. But they did a good job of mixing up plays, running, passing. Eventually it became clear that they weren't going to be able to run the ball too much. And then when they got behind, they had to abandon it altogether for the most part. But I thought the first quarter and a half was really – I was pleased with the way they came out and performed. And it was a couple of big plays, freakish plays to Chris Matthews, of all people,
mm-hmm.
that kept them in the game. It wasn't Wilson. It wasn't Lynch. They were bottling up Lynch. They were containing Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
He throws up two freakish – fluke passes to this guy who's never caught a pass in his life, and that's what kept them in it.
They did.
So if not for that, they would have been going into the half with a substantial lead. But that's not the way it turned out. And you know what? It's a good thing it didn't turn out that way, because it made the game more exciting.
Well, certainly made the win more exciting. Probably caused a few people to lose, hair follicles and things like that. Present company excluded, of course.
Don't have many to lose.
No, that's true. Ba-dum-tsh. But I just, it didn't have to be that way. Yeah, Kevin, too. Yeah.
Well, you really went bald there, didn't you?
Yeah.
Thanks, Jerry.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jerry. I just that was my major nitpick from the game, the end of the second quarter drive. And then to have the game turn around as it did after Seattle seized control, I kept thinking, looking at, the Seahawks personnel and the sets that they were in, that if they were going to continue to go over the top, which we knew that they would probably do, because they do have some, Russell Wilson does have some accuracy throwing the deep ball. That's probably his best attribute as a passer, because largely I think he's underwhelming as a drop back passer, but it's his overall athleticism that really causes him to excel in the game and is going to make him one of the best to play the game, certainly for the foreseeable future, I think, in the league. You want to put him in that quote-unquote top five category in the NFL? You probably have to. Certainly he's got to be right there with just about anybody else in the league. But I kept thinking the Patriots would adjust, and they never really adjusted. And I almost thought, okay, this might be a little New England arrogance getting into the way of doing what really needs to be done in order to win a football game. And we did see one change, because in the first half, Kyle Arrington got himself abused a little bit, really through not much fault of his own. I thought he had tight coverage on most of the attempts that were coming his direction. But they did put Brandon Browner. They did make a switch a little bit on Matthews, mm-hmm. and Browner came over just because of the physical matchup, mm-hmm. was just a little bit too much for a guy like Arrington to handle.
Yeah, I thought the defensive backs did a great job for the most part covering all night. The freak catches that Matthews made, the cornerback was there. He was just their smaller person. They couldn't get up to make the play, but it's not like they were beaten by 5 yards. They were right there step for step. It was just the guy made a couple of great plays. The exception would be, I think, the touchdown to Matthews, which was Logan Ryan, who was playing off him the whole time and never really had a chance to make a play on that mm-hmm. ball. That was a little disappointing. But mm-hmm. the other ones, Arrington was right there on that deep ball. On the curse freak play, too, Malcolm Butler knocked it away, really. It's just...
Well, that to me is one of the more significant plays in Super Bowl history that will be forever shadowed by Malcolm Butler's interception at the goal line. I mean, when you think about it, that play was as just as remarkable as Lynn Swann's catch over Mark Washington back in, what, Super Bowl X, I think it was?
One of those,
one of those with the Steelers
early
and the
ones.
Cowboys.
Yep.
And just as significant, I think, as David Tyree's catch against the Patriots.
Yeah.
And certainly Mario Manningham's catch. And even Wes Welker's non-catch, as we're fond of, you know, unfortunately remembering around here. To have that as a footnote in this game tells you about how this game should be remembered and probably will be remembered. It's phenomenal to have had a game turn out like that, to have the number of significant plays happen, whether they were, you know, flukish or not. I keep shaking my head.
It was a great game.
Still can't believe I saw the whole thing.
I can't believe it either, but I can't believe even more that it was as good a game as we thought it could be.
Yep. Yep.
It was well played. It was the two best teams playing at their best for 60 minutes.
Correct.
Great plays made by big-name guys, by unknown guys.
Right.
Coaching had a factor in that, too, obviously. But it was a phenomenally well-played game and exciting. When it comes down to the last play of the game, and your team can win it,
it's
nothing's better than that in sports.
It's truly more amazing. I'm watching some of the old clips of the 2001 Patriots on NFL Network behind you there, Eric. And how young did Tom Brady look back in
the moment? I know. Right.
Compared to how he is now. I mean, he's not really an old-looking guy now at age 37. But still,
looks like a real
he was
baby.
A baby.
Yeah.
A baby.
I know.
And by the way, the tuck rule?
Yeah.
That was a fumble. I can say that now. Maybe I should go there.
Oh no! Come on, John.
No, you don't want to go there.
No, not really. It's still post Super Bowl week. We're still enjoying things.
I can't believe Ray Lewis and I are going to agree on anything.
Oh God!
Isn't that great? Oh, I just looked at it again about six times behind you in slow mo. I'm like, oh crap, that's a fumble.
Well, I can't concentrate anymore because I heard you brought in cranberry bread.
I understand. All right. Well, I want to make sure that, you know, before you get off and finish the Super Bowl edition.
We are.
Of,
and we have, we have, we have what's going to be the best headline that anybody has had.
Really?
For this game. Oh, yeah.
Can we have a teaser?
Oh, yeah. No.
You're not. You just.
I can't. It's
you're just
going
to have to. You're going to have to get the Super Bowl edition of PFW.
It's. We've seen all the covers because people have already. I mean, even Sports Illustrated's was pretty good.
Okay.
They went with On to Immortality.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Which is a good one.
Not bad, but our cover is going to be even better.
Going to blow more away?
More clever.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So it's a collector's item?
Oh, God, yes.
All right. You heard it from Eskal. All right? You heard it from him. Let's make sure you know that the phone lines are open. 855-PATS-500. Toll-free number, 855-PATS-500. 728-7500 is the toll-free number. Web radio at patriots.com on the email. At JR Broadcaster is the Twitter handle. John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, is the Facebook address. And I will tell you that I want to talk to everybody I can today. I would love to hear from you. I want your thoughts on the game. I want your thoughts on looking ahead, how you want to see things happen over the offseason, if you want to jump into Revis a little bit, and whether or not he might resign or what he would resign for. We can get into all of that today. Everything is on the table. You want to nitpick the game from last Sunday, we can do that too. We can do a little bit of everything. Russell Baxter, a.k.a. Pro Football Guru, will join us in 45 minutes to say sayonara to the previous season. And we'll hear what he has to say about going into the offseason as well. But before we do anything else and we let Eric go, Kev, do we have Mr. Scalavino's specialty ready to roll?
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
Now, when we do our monthly off-season playbooks, as we announced at the top of the program today, does this mean you'll make a monthly appearance and a monthly Word of the Day?
If I'm in the studio and available there that day, of course.
We'll have to plan around
any
that
day I'm on the show, you can.
We'll have to turn it into a Word of the Month for the day.
Well, no, but that particular day.
Okay. Just wondering. All right, so do we have one that can coincide with my absolute absent-mindedness over taking the football at the start of the game?
Sure.
Because I was so stunned into absolute stupidity.
I'm going to go with catafalque.
Catafalque?
Mm-hmm. C-A. Well, you try to. Oh, I'm sorry.
Catafalque.
Yeah.
That would be C-A-T-A-F-A-U-L-K, like in Kevin Falk.
No. No. C-A-T-A was right.
Okay.
F-A-L-Q-U-E.
I figured it would be something, you know, Frenchy on the end of that.
It's it's an ornamental structure on which a coffin is laid and displayed during like a state funeral.
Really?
Yes.
It's called a catafalque?
Catafalque.
Really?
Okay. So to use it in a sentence, I would say if the Seattle Seahawks dreams of a back-to-back title were a head of state, they would now be lying on a catafalque.
On a catafalque. Okay. All right. That's a stretch, but I'll take it.
Of course it's a stretch. But, you know, the point is to learn the word, and, you know, the fun of it is to try to get it to apply to what we're talking
about.
We
need to come up with, I think one of the things we need to do is we need to go back and archive all of Eric's words of the day, and then we need to put them somewhere on the website so people can actually see these and look at what kind of a real loony bin this guy is over here. Don't you think?
Hey, listen.
See, Kevin's in agreement, by
the way. You're an educator. You should be all in favor of this, my friend.
Just never heard the term loony bin. I've heard loony.
You've never heard loony bin?
No, I've heard Looney Tune.
No, loony bin.
I've never heard loony bin.
That's like a, you know.
A loony bin is actually.
Like a house. Like the hospital.
Yeah, exactly, where all the loonies reside. And so, you know, he's of such stature that he's got a bunch of loonies hanging around inside that head.
Are you mental?
Basically, yes, we are.
I'm just craving some cranberry bread.
Okay, go get it. Go
can
get
can
it.
We open it? Can we have it?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, go to it.
All right.
All right.
You want some?
No, that's okay. You guys enjoy. Yeah, you guys enjoy. It's good. It's all for you.
You sure?
Yes, I'm positive.
Okay.
Positive.
Thank you, Robin.
Yes, I'm sure she welcomes. She welcomes. Yeah,
oh,
totally. Yep. See, there it is. All right. Let's get the phone lines open.
Hey, it was a good season, my man.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. We all thought that this team would end up in the Super Bowl for the most part.
Yep.
So that prediction obviously came true. We were within really one game, win or loss, in terms of the overall prediction of the season.
Yep.
I said it would be New England and Green Bay, so I missed that by a game, but close. You had the two correct teams, right?
Patriots over Seahawks.
You had the Patriots over Seahawks, so you nailed it. So let's give you credit where credit is due.
I had 12-4, Patriots over Seahawks.
There you go. And you got it.
And I'm glad to hear
that. And you know what this sound is?
Yes, the one-hand clapping.
Yes, the sound of one-hand clapping.
But I'm glad to hear that we're going to have off-season playbooks.
Woohoo!
To step into.
Yeah, we're psyched about that.
That is. That's great news.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll definitely do that. Thank you for everything this year.
My pleasure.
Always love having
you
on the playbook. Yes, you will. Most definitely. All right, let's get to the telephones. 855-PATS-500. Send off your emails, webradio@patriots.com. If you just want to say, hey, love your stuff. Boo, hated your stuff. See, why don't you have more stuff? Whatever you want to do. Twitter, @JRBroadcaster, John.Rook on Facebook, post away. Here's Miguel in Oregon. Hello, Miguel. You're in the playbook.
Hey, John. What's up? How's it going?
It's going well, my man. Going well.
How about them Patriots?
Yeah, baby. We're there. We're in.
Hey, we can't say enough about Tom Brady, man. Honestly, I'm going to tell you right now, I was looking out over some stats, and nobody has ever overcome a 10-point deficit in the Super Bowl, and then the Seahawks have never given up a lead, a 10-point lead in the third quarter for the last 2 years.
Right.
And when you see Tom Brady do that, and I know the Super Bowl came down to that one last play, but Tom Brady was money in the fourth quarter. He tear that defense apart. And he is by far the greatest quarterback of all time. And not to insult Montana or anything, but it's just idiotic to me that it's even better not to get to two more Super Bowls even though you lose him than to go to the Super Bowl even though you lose him, you know what I mean?
Right.
And did you guys hear the Tom Brady's opening speech to the team? Oh my God, it was just like goosebumps. You know? Did you hear that?
Yes.
We are honor and all that. And
yes.
It's just like there's no leader like Tom Brady, and I'm just happy we want this one. And hey, I guess the score, man.
Wait a second. That's right. Oh, I'm glad you reminded me. Wait a second, Miguel. I'm glad you reminded me because in the season-long contest of you know, Prediction Thursday, we actually did, Kevin Collins. I believe we had two people correctly predict the score, and Miguel Morgan is one of them. You are one of them. Now, I've forgotten off the top of my head who the second one was. I believe it was a Facebook poster. So what we need you to do.
No. Wait,
I know you are. You were also on Facebook.
Yeah, that's me. But I'm saying
I think the other one was also a Facebook poster, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I called the show like Tuesday. I think it was Wednesday, and I said 28-24, baby.
Right.
And it happened. And I won two bets from the Super Bowl, so I'm kind of stoked. And then I guessed the score, so that was great.
Well, that's outstanding. And when we get done with our phone call, I'll put you on hold, and Kevin can get your info, and then you get the collector's item. How's that?
All right. Well, thank you very much, John. And I'm kind of glad you're going to have more shows. I was actually going to ask you about that, and I was glad to hear that you're actually going to be at least once a month.
Well, it's something that, you know, we just decided after a number of years that there's probably enough interest in it. You know, whether you like it or not, or you enjoy the program or you don't, there's probably a market for it. And so we're going to test it out, and we'll bring some guests in, and we'll talk about the current topics around the team and whatever's going on at the time. That's what we're going to jump into. And, you know, it'll still be an off-season version, but, you know, we'll figure we'll catch up on things over the course of a month and bring them to you. And if you can only catch the show all too often, well, then,
yeah.
You know, and if you can't catch it live, then you can always download the podcast and you're all caught up. So we'll be doing that for six times during the year during the off season.
Yeah. And another topic I wanted to say real quick, I know you got all the callers. I think we should take care of McCourty and Revis and see where things go with Mayo. I really, really want to see him back next year. I hope he can take a pay cut knowing that he hasn't been playing the last 2 years and he can bring something to the table, and then we can talk about giving him a contract. But I really, really want to see Gerald Mayo back next year because I think we need another physical guy there. And I hope this offseason it's good for the Patriots. And from now, man, if I can see Brady win one more, it's outstanding. You know, it's great. But I just really, really wanted to see him win a fourth.
Well, and I think there are a lot of people that would agree with you on both counts, Miguel. And as far as Mayo's concerned, I think the feeling's mutual. I think the Patriots would love to bring him back. The problem is, at what price? And if they can come to a mutually agreeable price, then I think you'll see Gerard Mayo back. But if he has visions of grandeur, and you know very well what the track record is for this organization in paying veteran players who are probably on the downside of their career, especially with a guy who, even though he's meant a lot, with a guy who has diminishing value to the team overall, they've got to come to a meeting of the minds. If they can't, he'll move on.
If I'm Bill, I'm gonna say, you know what? You're a great player, a great leader. I want you here. I want you here to lead this team, this defense. But play for me 1 year. Show me what you can do next year, and then I'll pay you. So that's what I had to.
Yeah, that's right. He has to, you know, come back out, for lack of a better phrase, and prove that he can stay healthy.
Yeah. All right, Sean. Well, John. So it was a good call.
Thanks, Miguel.
For taking my call.
You got it.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet. I'm gonna put you on hold. Okay. We'll let Kevin take care of you there. And congratulations to Miguel. And by the way, I'm, like I said, off the top of my head, I'm so scatterbrained over the course of the last week or so with the game and the basketball duties I've had to do and all this other stuff. No excuse. Just a reason. But I'm not sure off the top of my head who the other person was. I'm pretty sure, I'm almost dead positive there were two correct 28-24 Super Bowl predictions. So all I need you to do, to the person who's listening, is to grab a screen grab of your prediction. If you send it Twitter or you send it Facebook, and just, you know, either tweet it or Facebook it back to me. And I'll go back and look as well over the next day or two, and then we'll get you your media guide yearbook. Here is Chris in Fall River. Hey, Chris.
Hey, John. How's it going?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
Good. I'm just wondering why Russell Wilson hasn't gotten more flack for that pick that he threw.
You know, the PFW guys were talking about that at the end of the show, and I kind of agree with that. The pass was, he zinged it in there, and it was up and away a little bit. and it was actually in a very good position for Malcolm Butler to make the bump that he did.
Not only that, but I've been watching the coaches' film on Game Rewind. He motioned both Baldwin and Lynch off the left side, kept the stack of Kirst and Lockett on the right, mm-hmm. looked over at Lockett, didn't take his eyes off him for the rest of the play, essentially.
So he kind of locked in on him. And yeah,
opening off to the left.
Right.
And opening up on Chandler Jones, I think, going to the back of the end zone. So if he had gone to one other person in his progression, they might have had a touchdown.
He certainly might have, but he looked at him straight on, and you could tell that from the snap of the football. And he did not bank on Malcolm Butler, you know, jumping the route, and that's what makes Malcolm's play one of the more remarkable plays that you or I or any other Patriot fan or any other football fan is liable to see with so much on the line in a game of that magnitude ever again. That's how unbelievably incredible Malcolm Butler's play was to save the game and help the Patriots win the Super Bowl. It was a confluence of events that really defy logic in many different aspects, several aspects. The fact that he had the presence of mind to jump the route because he recognized the formation. And then as, you know, he began his snap count and his cadence at the line, you can see him beginning, if you look at it again, you can see him beginning to creep up into the slot there. And sure enough, he guessed absolutely 110%, bang, right on the nut. That's exactly what Russell Wilson was going to do, and he did not look him off at all. And you're right, Wilson, for all of the wonderful athleticism he possesses, and I think he's a very good quarterback. I'd still take Tom Brady over him any day. But for the athleticism that he possesses, and he is an unbelievable mismatch with his legs and his ability to make defenders miss, and let's ask Chandler Jones and Rob Ninkovich about that just a little bit. He did not make a smart play. He needed to check off a little bit, and he didn't do it, and it cost him.
Absolutely. All right, thanks, John. Have a good one.
Chris, thank you for the phone call, and appreciate that. And, you know, this is not really meant to denigrate or, you know, rag on anybody or say that anybody is a lesser player than anyone else. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, in victory or defeat, I think a certain amount of graciousness needs to come forth, because that's really what, you know, sport should be about. And I'm not going to wax poetic here or anything else like that. And I say that in light of the fact that we had the shoving and the bumping and the pushing at the end of the game when the Patriots were trying to take a knee. And my initial impression was that really was cheap and that was really dirty. And that just showed true character or lack thereof. And that was my initial impression. And now that I've had a chance to sort of think about it a little bit more, I'm kind of led to believe that in the heat of battle, when emotions are really high, and if you are a competitor and you have been a competitor at any stage of your life, you hate to lose. I don't think there's any such thing as a good, gracious loser, because I think even if you lose with grace and you lose with dignity and you lose with, you know, good sportsmanship and you're shaking hands and you tell your opponent good game and everything, you're still seething underneath. I don't think anybody who has 1 ounce of true gumption in their veins loses gratefully. You may do it on the outside to try to show class, but inside, you're dying. Inside, you're hurting. Inside, you are ready to whack somebody upside of the head. And frankly, I think that's what happened with Seattle. Those guys I have the utmost respect for. They have tremendous athletes. I think you realize that 3/4 of their starting secondary played that game hurt and hurt badly. You know, with the news now that Cam Chancellor had an MCL tear going into that game. Because he didn't have an extra gear, and I think we saw that when he was matched up against Gronk on the few occasions that he was there. It's not an excuse. I'm not excusing anyone, because everybody plays hurt at the end of the year. There's two categories. You're either hurt or you're injured. If you're hurt, you're playing. If you're injured, you're out. Those three guys were hurt. If they were injured, they shouldn't have played. Fact of the matter is that Seattle didn't have anybody better than those guys playing hurt. That's why they were in there. Patriots had their own bumps and bruises too, and I think we all know this. So it's not an excuse. It is, however, a plausible reason for what happened. They are just ultimate competitors. They had victory. They had victory snatched from the jaws of defeat, or snatched by the jaws of defeat right at the end, or however you want to use the old adage. And I'm sure it was quite shocking. And so I think that was part of the reason why we saw the scrum at the end, that, you know, Gronk went on Jimmy Fallon and pleaded with, Roger Goodell, you know, not to fine him over, you know, throwing a punch, which was really, you know, in reaction to being pushed to the ground primarily by Bruce Irvin. And you'll go back and you can look at it and you make your own judgments. And if you're a Seattle fan, I'm sure you will vehemently disagree with what I'm saying. But I will tell you this, that, I think that all competitors have a moment or two where, you know, if you can swallow your pride and you can congratulate, you know, your conqueror, if you will, you know, underneath your seething. And I totally get that. I understand it. Doesn't excuse it, but it might be a plausible reason for what we saw. Sam in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. You're in the playbook, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
How's it going with you?
Doing well.
Good.
I wanted to circle back to the Logan Mankins trade. Thinking about, if I'm correct, Tim Wright didn't have a catch through any of the three playoff games, including the Super Bowl. And I wanted to ask, does winning the Super Bowl justify that trade? Because you kind of wonder, you know, do they run the ball a little better in the Super Bowl behind Logan Mankins? Do they have the same offensive line struggles against the Ravens?
Mm-hmm.
Do they hit the same snag early in the season against Kansas City? It's just kind of things that you wonder. And so I wanted to hear what you thought about it.
I'll be honest, after about midway through the season, I really didn't give it another thought. And I think it's because that's when we started to see, you know, Brian Stork assert himself at center. And the rest of the team sort of fell in line, pardon the pun, but they just sort of formed around him. And I think we all knew, and I think deep down the Patriots coaching staff knew that that could happen, which is why they made the choices that they did early in the year. Now, granted, the Patriots took some heat for that. I think Tom Brady was certainly less than and thrilled when that move happened. But the fact of the matter is, and this is case in point why I mentioned earlier about Gerard Mayo and why it bears repeating here when it comes to considering, you know, what to do about Darrell Revis or Devin McCourty or Stephen Ridley or anybody that's a free agent. You have to understand that this team has a track record of doing literally what Bill Belichick says, and that's what's in the best interest of the football team. And so that means physically, it means personnel, it means finances. All of it, all of the above, what they feel at the moment is the best interest of the football team. And so they thought then what we all saw later, that this offensive line could at least be competitive and begin to formulate itself even in light of making this move. And that being said, they still offered Logan a chance to stick around at a reduced salary, and he was within his rights to do what he did and say no, because he had already done that once before, in his estimation, when he renegotiated downward. And you remember he went through the whole holdout, and, you know, and he said, you know, a man should, you know, stick to his word and yada, yada. And that's just the way Logan Mankin is. And you know what? That's fine. I respect that. And I respect everything that he did for this team while he was here. And he was still a part of this Super Bowl team, even though he spent his regular season in Tampa Bay, because he was part of this in the offseason, and he certainly was a part of this in building this franchise and this roster to the point it got to this year. And I hope that they, you know, will take care of him accordingly. Something tells me that they will. But in terms of, was it the right move to make? Well, hindsight's going to have to say yes, it was the right move to make. Especially when you go into the consideration of, this is the youngest average age Super Bowl championship team of all time. 25.2 years of age. And that's
New England this past year?
Yes.
Really? I had no idea.
That's
awesome.
25.2 years is the average age per player on the roster, and that's the youngest Super Bowl champion of all time. And that's with Tom Brady and Vince Wilfork on the roster.
Right.
So you have to.
We were talking about that with Seattle last year as well. That they, if I'm not wrong, last year Seattle was the youngest
to that point in time. And now the Patriots, I believe, are a tenth of a year or 2/10 of a year younger. So, you know, I don't really think that means a lot, because so much can change in free agency these days. So I just don't know how much that really means. I think it tells you that if things stay equal that you can certainly remain relevant for the foreseeable future. But I think we all know what the truth is here. And the truth is that things don't stay things don't stay equal because money always comes into play when guys come and go. So, you know, take it for what it's worth. I think, you know, in hindsight, that move was probably the right move to make, as painful as it was, but it helped this team move in a different direction. And on top of that, I will tell you, I think that the offensive line will be a heavy, heavy emphasis for this team in the offseason.
I would say so, too.
So there you go.
All right. Thanks for having me on, man. I'm a huge fan of the show.
Well, I appreciate that, Sam. Thank you very much for taking the time. You got it. Dave in Connecticut is up next to the playbook. Hello, Dave.
Hey, John. How you doing? First of all, I just want to give you a shout-out yourself and your show. You know, once again, it's been a pleasure all season long to trade barbers with you and talk football, buddy.
I appreciate that, Dave. Always good to talk.
I mean, make the season really enjoyable.
Well, thank you. It's always great to have you on the program. I appreciate your input.
Thanks, bud. You know, what can you say about this game? But wow, okay. I mean, my sentiments were almost like on Mr. Kraft's sentiments. I mean, I can remember the first Super Bowl almost as it was yesterday, the Snow Bowl game. Mm-hmm. You know, all the big games. This game is going to, you know, be near and near to my heart with all those games. I mean, you know, sitting there, it was a battle. It was like watching Frazier and Ali go at it almost.
Sure.
You know, the two heavyweights of the league, trading punches.
Right.
Back and forth.
Right.
I mean, you know, Brady comes back from 14 down. They march the ball down. All of a sudden, you know, Kirsch is on his ass, and he makes a circus catch. And you're like, oh, my God, is that David Tyree? I'm looking for a Snickers bar or something, you know?
Right.
I'm like, no, eat a Snickers bar, you know? But thank God, you know, and it was the same player, but, you know, that had the interception, who had the wherewithal to push him out of bounds.
Yeah.
Stop him where he was.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, you just think that Belichick, I think, everyone's like, why didn't Belichick call a timeout? Why didn't Belichick call a timeout to try to conserve the clock there?
Yeah, I thought the same thing, too, initially, Dave. I'm like, why isn't he calling a timeout? And I really believe that, you know.
He baited him into throwing them more.
He baited them into throwing the ball and slowing it down because he knew they would not want to leave any time on the clock themselves. And I think it was eerily a brilliant call.
Well, I mean, I've been watching all the post show, you know, highlights with a lot of the microphones on the side. You clearly hear the defensive back coach tell Jenkins, Malcolm, get out there. You know, I mean, that's what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
He clearly told, you know, they told him to get out there on the field of that play.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid made a play of a lifetime to, you know, save us a Super Bowl. Hats off to him.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna go down as one of the most memorable plays in football history. Forget just the Super Bowl. It will be one of the most memorable plays in pro football history. And that's,
I think,
I'm not sure,
you know,
that
as a Patriot fan, you know, this would have been devastating to me personally. I mean, I've been able to decompartmentalize, you know, the Terrell catch, you know, and even Manningham catch. But a third one, I would have been devastated.
Yeah,
I'd have been like, what are we, jinxed? What are we?
That was my first reaction, Dave, was I'm like, oh, my God, not again. Really?
Yeah,
are we serious? We're going to go three straight Super Bowls where a circus catch, an unbelievable catch, is going to beat this team? I just thought, wow, you talk about, you know, curses. I'm thinking the ball rolling through Bill Buckner's legs again. I'm thinking proportion, you know?
And then, you know, the kid comes in there and makes that play. Let me tell you something, I was screaming like a little schoolgirl. We had a Super Bowl party, and I mean, it was just the change of emotion.
Yeah.
It was just incredible.
Well, that's what makes it so much fun to be a fan, you know?
Yeah, it was something, you know, we had, like, you know, younger kids. We woke them up because we wanted them to see this kind of thing, you know?
Right.
And then they have that in their memory bank, you know, because they see their uncles and dads always talking about the Patriots and the Patriots that, you know what I mean? We actually, like, woke a couple of them up so they could experience it, you know?
Nice.
And, you know, making some new young Homer, bigger football fans out of the guys. But
right.
It's been a hell of a season, and I don't want to shoot the gun here, but you know, like you said, you know, there's a lot of variables that play into it, but I think our rallying call this year should be one for the thumb. I really do. I don't see why we can't get back there and get another one done.
Well, if you take into consideration, you know, the younger age of the overall roster, if you can bring back, you know, at least a couple of the key free agents,
right.
if Revis turns out to be one of them, I really don't think this team will bring him back at that $20 to $25 million cap hit.
I don't think we can, you know, if he's stuck at that.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to say, you know, Darrell, thank you for your services.
Thank you for helping us get a W. Yeah, right.
But you're not going to be able to sign Collins down the road.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to sign other players you need to sign, you know.
I think re-signing Devin McCourty is almost as important, in my opinion.
I think he deserves it. I really do. I mean, he's pretty much reconstructed his career as, you know, the free safety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he was cornerback, you know, oh, he gets beat. I mean, he's done a heck of a job there. And I think, you know, he might not be the hardest hitting, but I definitely think he plays ankles well, and I think he's probably one of the smarter, you know, around the ball kind of
sure.
free safeties.
Sure.
I mean, he's definitely done a great job the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same thing with Collins. It's the same thing with Hightower. You know, somewhere down the road, we're going to have to pay these guys.
Right.
You know, we can't put all our money into Darrell, which, I mean, I'd love to keep him. I really would. But at what sacrifice to the team?
Yep.
If you're going to lose, you know, possible two or three other key components because you can't afford it to keep Darrell, then you got to let him go.
Yep. I, sad as I have to admit, I think you're right, and that's kind of how I view it, because I think there are other needs. I'm not sure that we see Stephen Ridley back. I think he's one. I'm not sure we'll see Gerard Mayo back. I think he's another they'd love to have back, but it's going to be at a number that the Patriots are comfortable with.
I know they re-signed Bolden, which gave him that 3-year extension.
Yes.
I think they need to sign Vereen. I really do. I think they need to.
I'm not really, so sure that that's the case, David.
Ridley, I can live without. Ridley, I can live without.
Okay. And I would say right now, however, maybe Vereen over Ridley. And the reason I say that is because I'm not sure they're sold on James White being a lesser expensive version.
Shane Vereen.
And especially since we saw him catch 11 of his 12 targets in the Super Bowl, knowing how valuable that is to Tom Brady, you know, and having that quick, you know, outlet and that quick release capability, I think that probably puts a little more urgency in trying to get Vereen done.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not crazy money. You know, respectable money. You know, I give him maybe $8 million for 2 years, $8 million for three, you know, something like that. Nothing off the, you know, nothing's going to really hurt you. Yeah, you know, and I think you're going to be set with Blunt and the other guys there. Mm-hmm. You know, wide receiver, I think, you know, it all depends on your adoption again. I mean, I've been a champion that kid for a couple of years, but
right.
This is it.
Right.
This is a, you know, make or break year. He's going to stay healthy. He's going to prove he can be that player that we all thought he was going to be when we drafted him. If not, then family going there.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Sure.
What do you think, you know, about maybe keeping Edelman and Amendola?
I've got to take a harder look at, you know, what their contracts call for, Dave, because I've just frankly had no time to do that just yet.
Yeah.
I'd love to see both of them, you know, because I think they both prove that they have places here. I like Amendola's ability to complement Julian in the kicking game as well as a kick returner and or as a punt returner. And I think we also realize that injuries are inevitable. They do happen every year, and that as long as, again, you can agree to numbers, and that has to be a two-way street. It has to be the organization as well as the athlete agreeing to the numbers involved. then I think we all know that Amendola can come in and play Julian's role, while Amendola can also go to the outside if he needs to and play another role in case somebody gets hurt. And so that's why I'd love to see them try to make the effort of going both ways and keeping them both. But, again, it's all about the numbers and whether or not you've got two willing parties.
That's true. That's true.
But with the injuries the way that they occur, I think we've seen it time and time again, and this year is certainly proof of that. And the Patriots stayed as healthy this year as they have in recent memory, with only the two significant injuries knocking guys out, for the season. So, and they overcame both of them largely because they've had very strong depth, and so I think it's imperative that they keep some representative of that depth still intact. And I think you can do that by keeping Amendola.
Well, the guys definitely deserve it this year. And, before you know it, we're going to be looking at the draft and
absolutely
get rolling here.
And I'm sure you and I will roll on that as well. Dave, thank you very much for the time. Let's go to Kareem in New Jersey up next in the playbook.
Hey, Don, how are you, sir?
Good, Kareem.
Congratulations to all of us, sir.
Absolutely. Congrats all the way around.
Yes, sir. I don't know if you got my message. I almost had a heart attack thinking that I'll never talk to you till next season. But also,
it's not that bad, Kareem.
But shame on me for not paying attention that we're going to be here a year long, right?
Well, yes. We made the announcement at the top of the opening hour of the program that we're going to do special monthly editions of the playbook during the six off-season months starting next month in March. And so we'll go March, April, May, June, July, August with one playbook a month, usually around a significant Patriots activity or NFL activity. And we'll bring some guests into the program, and we'll run the show just like we do during the season. But it'll just sort of be a special kind of magazine edition of the playbook, just to kind of whet your appetite and get you ready for the 2015 kickoff.
That's awesome. Well, again, I don't know, honestly, before even I say anything, I really want to thank you, thank Kevin, everybody who was involved in making this a really wonderful year. I mean, I'm a great fan, and you guys took the enjoyment of a season to another level, and I highly appreciate all the hard work and putting up with us too, because nobody says about that.
Well, that may be, Kareem, but I appreciate the passion in everyone. There's no such thing as a silly question. There's no such thing as a stupid comment. Everybody's opinion matters. Whether listeners, wherever they're listening, think so or not, it matters to me because you took the time to pick up the phone, or you took the time to type a message on your keyboard and then send it. And because you took the time, I'm going to take the time. And that's what I feel you have to do in order to be successful.
That's why you're the best, John. Highly appreciate it. Other thing, too, I don't know, just a little little joke. I also said in my message, if I tell you that the 27-24 prediction that I had was a typo and I meant to say 8, you believe me?
No, I'm not believing you. Sorry.
All right, good man. You're a smart man.
It's a good try, though.
Game, man. I'm telling you, it just was awesome.
Yeah.
A couple of things I'm going to point out real quick. Nobody really, it's amazing, because obviously the Butler interception is one of the greatest plays you'll ever witness in the history of football, not just in the Patriots history. Mm-hmm. But nobody really talks much about the Akeem Ayers stop to Lynch prior to that catch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think, to me, honest to God, I've seen the last 3 minutes of the game, I think 15 times so far. I think that stop at the one-yard line is tremendous, is unbelievable, and Marshawn Lynch has the tendency, he always does this, that he extends his arm, as a lot of the running backs do, to pass the ball. Akeem Ayers, if you look at it one more time, you will see that he's trying to bat the ball, trying to stop his arm from being extended. It's unbelievable stuff, and it really set us up, phenomenally. I could not believe it when I saw it especially over and over again.
Yeah, it's a special play, and you're right. We don't even get to the controversy and to the shocking ending as we get to without guys stepping up and I hate to be cliche here, but doing their job, and that's what everybody did. And that's why the mantra of do your job was so unbelievably correct for this year, because there really wasn't anybody who had an outstanding individual year outside of maybe Rob Gronkowski, and I guess Tom Brady to a certain extent, but everybody had a year that was expected of them, and they held up their end of the bargain. And this is the result. This is what happened, you know, when guys go out and they execute the way that they're supposed to and the way they're expected to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One more thing also. I was looking at the free agency, and I see Darrell Revis. I see, you know, 5-6 named Dan Connolly, Shane Vereen, Gostkowski. I mean, you look at these names, and, man, like, first of all, I mean, how bummed are you for getting rid of Logan Mankin?
Well, I'm not really. I said,
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
I mean
you know, I'm bringing back just, you know, the memories of us in the beginning of the year.
Oh, sure, and we were crying about it, and a lot of people were killing the Patriots for it, and understandably so at the time, because nobody really understood the big picture. Now that the season's over, you can clearly see the big picture, and the Patriots knew what they were doing all along. So we'll have to go back to the old, you know, trite cliche of "In Bill We Trust," because he was the one that made the call, and we killed him at the time, and I'm sure there will be other moves that he will make that we'll kill him for again. But there will always be a handful of people that will say, you know what, let's give the guy the benefit of the doubt. And that's one we probably should have given him the benefit of the doubt on.
Absolutely. So Stephen Ridley, I mean, I don't see him in the Patriots jersey anymore. I heard you saying about Gerard Mayo. I even thought about that, even though he's not a free agent. But I see exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, as much as I love the man, I would love to keep him, I don't think Shane Vereen will be here.
No, I'm hopeful that they'll make him an offer that he'll decide he wants to keep, because unless Shane thinks he could be an every down back someplace else, this is the spot that's tailor made for him, because the Patriots will utilize his capabilities and his talents to their utmost. So and I don't know, the only other place that he could go to would be a team that would give him the ball as a running back more often. And you know, if there's someone that's willing to do that to him, then you know what? It's hard to tell him no, don't go do that, because that's probably going to come, you know, more responsibility is going to come more, with more money.
Absolutely.
So how could you tell him no, don't go do it? I mean, you and I both would consider it heavily.
Yep.
So we'll have to wait and see if somebody offers him, because if they do, that's usually what drives guys away in a situation where you'd like to want them. It means there's a competing factor involved.
Absolutely, and I hope he takes the Wes Welker factor in place when that offer gets made.
Right.
Like, here's Wes Welker, you know, was offered this and that.
Yeah.
And thank God, you know, I mean, I don't want to say thank God he didn't get the Super Bowl, but thank God we got a Super Bowl without him, just to show that it doesn't really, I mean, money is great, of course. This is what drives us, most of us, especially in this kind of business. I think it's huge. But I would love to see him, but for the right price.
Right. I agree. I agree with that.
Absolutely. I would love to see Darrell Revis next year. I mean,
well, we all would. We saw what kind of a difference he can make. We'd all love to see it. He will not be here at the current 1-year deal that the Patriots have him under. That I think would be the last thing you would expect this team, considering their fiscal track record. That would be the last thing you would expect of the Patriots to do. I think that there's some mutual interest, and that it also comes from Darrell, and I'm sure he'll have some time to sit and think about it now over the next month or so. But, you know, I think you'll see at least both sides come to a meeting of the minds where they'll at least try to make it work, and we'll find out if they can do it. I hope they can, because if they can and sign him to, you know, extend him out another 2 or 3 years, then the Patriots can be right back where they were next year, and they really can make that one for the thumb run.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then now you're greedy and you want another one next year.
Oh, hell yeah.
Lie.
Oh, hell yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, hell yeah. Totally.
John, I'm going to leave room for everybody else.
All right, Kareem.
I'm going to miss the playbook till the next time. Again, tremendous, tremendous job. Thank you. Thank you for being who you are. Thank Kevin. I would love for you to read that message. I really meant every word I said in it. And thank you for having us.
You got it, buddy. We will talk soon again, I'm very sure. Here's Lars in Sweden. Lars, you're in the playbook. How are you?
I'm fine, John, and I'm sure you too.
Yes, sir. Totally, totally. So what are your thoughts, Lars?
Well, you know, John, this has to be, even as a neutral fan, that might be the best Super Bowl since Super Bowl 43, honestly. What do you think?
Sure. It's right up there with every one of them. It's for all the good ones. You know, and there have probably been a dozen or so that you could put up there with, you know, some sort of big-time memory with a key play or a big play made or something that went right down to the very end. And I kind of lose track of some of the numbers from time to time, Lars. But, yeah, I definitely think it's right there with some of the best Super Bowl games ever played, without a doubt.
Yeah, and, you know, the classic finish of the last drive on the one-yard line, and somehow you just can't avoid these dramatic finishes. Whether you have the lead or you're down, it always comes down to these scenarios. That's why it was really important to have a very good Super Bowl.
Right.
Because, you know, it's the apotheosis, the pantheon of the NFL after that. After last year's debacle, it was really important to have an exciting game. And you know, John, what they did is unbelievable. To beat the number one rushing attack, number one defense, the defending champs, and a crowd in their advantage is unprecedented. It's a miracle.
Yeah, you'd have to say the way that it finished, Lars, you'd have to say it was pretty close to a miracle. But I also think that good teams find a way to put themselves in position to be successful. And, you know, while I wasn't terribly happy, as we talked a little earlier in the program today, with either of those drives, the one at the end of the second quarter and certainly that one at the end of the game that required Butler's brilliance to close it out, the fact of the matter is that for the most part, the Patriots were able to put themselves in position to win this game. They just probably made it a little harder on themselves than they had to.
Well, yeah, and what a story it is. You know, the Malcolm Butler, he's the only graduate from his college program to play in the NFL, and he makes the play of a lifetime. It's crazy for him.
It is crazy. And he's a great story. Here's a kid that was, you know, kicked off of his JUCO team and goes to a Division II team and has some success there, and then gets a free agent tryout, and the Patriots had their roster pretty much all set, and then they take a look at him in one of those laundromat type of workouts, you know, where they bring in a bunch of different guys, and he just stands out because of his speed and his ability to just make plays, and it just worked out for him. It's a brilliant story, and it's one that proves that, you know, little guys and good guys can win ultimately. So it's pretty cool.
Oh, it was cool, and you know, I don't know. What did you think about the halftime show? It was pretty cool too, though.
You know, I thought it was okay. I'm not a huge Katy Perry fan. I actually like Lenny Kravitz. Okay, pretty good entertainer. So I liked his entry in there and the rap with Missy What's-Her-Name that's in there. I thought that was actually all pretty good, because you're appealing to the younger audience, which you always have to do. And so overall, I would certainly give it a passing grade, better than we've seen some in recent years.
I agree. I just think the stages and the way they set this up is very impressive. I'm not a fan really of Katy Perry too, but you know, yeah, a lot of people are. So
yeah.
But Tom Brady, I mean, that has got to be one of his best comebacks ever.
Oh yeah. There's no doubt about that. You've got 47 now, come from behind wins, and I think 35 of them were in the fourth quarter come from behind wins. So, you know, his track record speaks for itself, without a doubt.
Oh yeah, he was the comeback kid, because in 8 minutes, fine, 6 minutes basically combined, he put up drives.
Oh, he did.
Oh my goodness.
He did.
And you know what, John, bottom line, we kind of needed that receiver since Deion Branch and Julian Edelman. He put the team on his back.
He did. And he did. Julian was my MVP. He was definitely my MVP. I think you can make a strong case for him, you know, gaining the award over Tom. And that's taking nothing away from Tom. But, you know, without Julian to catch those that he was throwing to him and to make the plays that he did and to, for him to be as consistent as he was all season, really, as opposed to even just, you know, the Super Bowl game himself is significant. And I think, you know, Edelman proved his worth.
Oh, he certainly is. And, you know, this group of guys, this is a winning formula, and, you know, you hope you can get them for one more year.
Yep.
And,
hopefully.
Hopefully. And it wasn't easy because when you lose Dron Mayo, you're kind of like, oh, my goodness, here we
right.
go again.
But, right.
You know, let's can't wait for America's game, and let's enjoy this one.
There you go. All right, Lars, great to talk to you. You betcha. We'll talk again soon. Here's Umar in Utah. Hello, Umar.
Hello, John. How you doing?
I'm great, buddy. How's it going?
Oh, man, I'm so freaking happy. I'm ecstatic. I'm still celebrating, man.
As well you should be. Patriots fans should be everywhere. You've got, I think, rightfully so, 6 months to celebrate.
Oh, yeah, 6 months to celebrate. Yeah, it's true. Then we are into the season again.
That's right. Totally.
So, yeah, I mean, it's great. You know, my MVP of this game was Shane Doreen because, you know, he's done so much. But, yeah, I mean, you guys are right. It could have been Julian Edelman. It could have been Tom Brady or even, you know, Malcolm Butler because he made, like, the billion-dollar play.
Yeah, he did. He did. And I think you make a good point about Vereen because he caught, you know, 11 of the 12 targets coming his way. And he was a wonderful safety valve. And really, I don't think the Seahawks took him into account well enough. So he took advantage of what they were giving him.
Yeah, the game plan was perfect. Not to throw too deep, just, you know, underneath passes and, you know, to the open guy, and that was great.
We felt like that would be part of the game plan going in, that they were definitely going to look at the underneath route. And, you know, we use the term dink and dunk a lot, and it's almost like it's a denigrating kind of a comment, but it's really not. It's because that's what teams give the Patriots. And if I'm somebody that's playing against New England, I'm trying to crowd the box, and I'm trying to make the Patriots beat me a little bit over the top. Now, they've had some success doing that, especially with Gronk, and we've seen what Gronk can do to the seam, you know, of a team that dares to zone them. But you know what? I'm not, you know, hey, Seattle, you know, they had every right to come in and play their game because they had been so successful with it, you know, with some of the zone coverages that they've shown us. And pretty hard to argue the kind of success when you turn out the numbers that they had turned out defensively. I think this was, I mean, they were the best defense in the NFL. The matchup showed that the Patriots just have, I think, at the skill positions, a little better talent than Seattle had to match up against them. That's really it.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. So, yeah, you said we have 6 months to celebrate, but I just feel like one of the strong reasons why we're a Super Bowl champion is also Darrell Revis.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if you had to pick one player, he would certainly be as good as any. Because of what he meant in solidifying the back end of the defense, legitimizing the fact that this team could play man-to-man coverage and not give up anything with too much help over the top from a safety. I just, you know, he took away half the field, and he forced teams, you know, to take a chance when they threw toward him, and he forced teams to take a chance when they threw away from him because they knew there would be help on the other side. So, yeah, he was a difference maker, without a doubt.
He's our off-season priority, so do you think we're going to be able to sign him back?
Well, I think, again, it all depends. As I said earlier, I think it all depends on the meeting of the minds. I think he wants to be back based on the early indications that I've heard. But he's not going to come back at the $20 million salary and 25 against the cap. He's not going to come back for that number because that would be fly right in the face of everything the Patriots have ever shown us in their fiscal prudence over the course of the last 15 years. That would be right up against it, and that would be the upset of the century, more so than Malcolm Butler's pick. So what I think what will end up happening here is that if he does come back, they will somehow agree to spread it out over a few years and extend his contract, if he's willing to do that. And,
yeah,
and we'll find out. This is all when it's about the player.
Exactly. Like, you think, like, over 2 or 3 years?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I do think they would extend him out a couple of years beyond this one.
Yeah, and do you know what would depress me, John? It's for him to sign back with the freaking Jets.
Well, I guess anything's possible because that's where, you know, initially he wanted to go. And that's where we thought that he might end up until Tampa Bay just out and out released him. And then the Jets obviously made an egregious error in judgment. So, you know, hard to say that that will be, you know, the same situation again. But, you know, if he doesn't re-sign and he does, you know, then, you know, he could conceivably end up anywhere that, you know, anybody that wants to pay him.
Yeah, I hope he signs in. So, yeah. And then one more thing. It's sad to say because he's part of the team, but we need to cut those two players, Aaron Dobson and Kyle Arrington. Because Arrington just doesn't know how to defend, and Dobson has been useless so far.
Well, I think both of those guys will get a chance to prove themselves again, you know, before any decision is made on whether to keep them or cut them. I'd be stunned if they didn't give Ob Dobson a chance because he was a draft, you know, was a relatively high draft pick. Arrington, I think, had a good enough year overall to where he certainly warrants being right now the front runner for the nickelback position because I think that's where he excelled. And I think we saw that in sometimes in man coverage that he was overmatched, but when he always had help over the top, he was pretty good player, and I think that's his role, and I think that's his niche, and I think if he's willing to live within his role, then I think there's probably going to be room for him somewhere.
Okay, all right, thanks a lot, John. Like I heard on the field, I love you all.
Thank you, Umar. Appreciate that, buddy.
Yeah.
You got it, man. Let's get to Steve and Killeen. Hello, Steve.
Hey, John. I'm going to digress here real quick now that we know that there's going to be the bonus rounds for the Patriots playbook. Does this mean that we actually will have the possibility of having the rookie in-house with you?
Well, you know what? If we can perhaps convince him, you know, to give up, you know, whatever his job is going to be, and he has to work this summer, then we might try to see if we could bring him into one of the summer editions of the playbook. Absolutely.
All right, if that works out, John, since Aldridge has been teasing you all season, I'll try and hook you and the boy out with some meat.
Woohoo! Yes!
Yeah, I'll get some ribs to you.
Nice. But, that would not suck. Thank you, Steve. That's awesome.
Not at all. To digress a little bit more, I got to give a little respect to Trent Dilfer for his mea culpa because nobody else in the media actually had the stones to step up and say, hey, you know what? We were wrong about the Patriots 4 weeks in.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
the hat to Dilford on that one.
Yeah, you know, and I, it's kind of funny how we all have revisionist history, you know. And you're right, you know, Dilfer at least was man enough to kind of step up and say, "Hey, I was wrong here." Funny how everybody else kind of slinks away from it and they don't pay any attention to it, and you know, oh, you know, it's all fun and games and blah blah blah. But if they had been right, then they would have been the first to pound their chest and say, "Look at me, look at me," you know. And that's what I don't like about a lot of the analysts that are out there nowadays. There are very few. There might be a handful of guys that I can count, in other words, on one hand, that I actually, you know, listen to what they say because, A, I respect them if they're a former player, and, B, if they're not a former player, then I know that they work at their craft and probably work the phones as well as any individual in the game in terms of their repertorial skills. And so those are the ones that I pay attention to, and I think, you know, the people tend to listen to the ex-athletes because they are the ex-athletes, because they were the stars and they were the favorites and they were the people that, you know, they were the players that people watched and you had admiration for their ability. But just because they can play the game doesn't mean they can talk the game.
Well, and all in all, Patriots.com continues to excel, which is why I no longer call you guys media. And, you know,
what are we then?
Well, you're reporters and journalists. I mean, who else but Little Mayo could get, you know, the monkey puppet information out of Bill?
So, isn't that great? I know, that is true. That was my favorite part of the whole Media Day fiasco was him talking about the little monkey puppet with Gerard's daughter. That was cute.
Yeah, and finally, I'm not even going to think about the offseason because, once again, I know Bill's going to go back into the workshop. And if we looked at the way this team was constituted at the beginning of the year, everybody's like, well, yeah, maybe, kind of, sort of. And then, you know, we win the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look back at those other years, the same thing has happened. And lastly, before I let you go, John, you know, part of what I do for my job is look at trends. We did odd, odd, even, even. 2015 is an even, is an odd year, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right, okay.
So if the pattern repeats, we're looking at winning in an odd year Super Bowl, and 2015 would be perfect.
Okay.
Because then that's, the, you know, one for the thumb of the drop for five, and then there is no more argument. This one, there's still use that little bit of, well, you know, maybe this, maybe that. No. We win five, and we do two back-to-back at the, you know, kind of bookending Brady's career.
Sure.
As he winds down, the argument's over. So,
okay. I think you have a very plausible explanation. I'll buy it.
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, we got Moss that year, and everybody's like, where did he come from? We got Revis this year. So, you know, I'm just waiting for Santa Claus, Kraft, and Belichick to pull another one out of the sack of tricks to make it go.
Perfect.
Taboo.
Yeah, and, right. You know,
I don't live that far away from Houston. If I could, you know, trank J.J. Watt and get him up there, I would do it. But
throw that Patriots propaganda his way, Steve.
could you imagine, though, Gronk and J.J. Watt?
No. That would be totally off the hook. I don't know. The ground might open up and swallow us all whole.
Oh, yeah, we're used to being spoiled, John, and that would definitely be the icing on the cake. And,
right.
And, you know, everybody would be not thinking about getting any sleep this season.
Right.
Cup to come. They'd be like, oh, okay, let's just give them the trophy and the rings now and be done with it. But, John, appreciate everything you do, brother, and I look forward to the off season. All the best to you and Patriots Nation. Thanks, folks.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate that. Great stuff as always, my man. Let's get Nick in Boston here. Nick, you're in the playbook.
John, how's it going?
Good, Nick.
Well, I wanted to thank you for all the work that you've done throughout the season. You and Kevin are the best. I know Kevin as well from the Fantasy Football Champs, and so
cool.
You know, the kind of work that he does and that you do, and it's awesome.
Well,
great season.
I appreciate your taking the time to say that. That's always appreciated. And, you know, we do it because we love the sport. We do it because we love who we work for. We do it because we love talking to you guys.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know if you remember, but I was one of the people who won your contest there during the bye. And
oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, that's right.
I've enjoyed the PFWs and got my T-shirt last week as well.
So. Sweet. You're in. Thanks. You're in, see, and we'll have to bring back the game show again. Don't doubt that at all. We might even have to bring you back as a defending champ, Nick.
Yeah, seriously. Well, hey, I'd love to defend the title.
Good. All right. Well, see, Kevin, we have our first contestant next year for our next edition of game show. All right,
there
Nick in Boston's got to defend the crown.
Yeah, just like the Patriots next year. But on that note, I mean, so you know, I think this championship The last two times that we were in the Super Bowl before this, you know, we lost close games, but we had an all-star who wasn't Tom Brady on offense in all of those Super Bowls. In 2007, we had Randy Moss, who obviously one of the greatest wide receivers to ever play the game.
Mm-hmm.
But he was, you know, he could only do one thing. I mean, he ran routes amazingly well and could catch the ball. You know, in 2011, we had... you know, we had Welker, who kind of was good at the short range pass, but and we also had Gronk, but he was injured. You know, he didn't contribute as optimally as he could have. This
mm-hmm.
time we had Gronk at full capacity, and he's, you know, an all-star caliber player
mm-hmm.
who, unlike Randy Moss, you know, I mean, he could catch like Randy Moss and, you know, ran pretty good moderate distance routes like Randy Moss, but he also had the added ability to contribute to blocking and to, you know, setting up amazing run plays and plays for other receivers on the team. So he, I think, was the difference this year on offense. I mean, we had him at full health finally. And unlike those other two times in the Super Bowl against the Giants, you know, he was a guy on offense who could do multiple things extremely well.
Yep.
And I just love the guy. The guy is a riot. He is going to be one of the – if he continues to stay with us and stay healthy, he's going to be one of the best Patriots offensive players other than Tom Brady of all time.
Sure.
So,
yep.
You
good.
Know,
yeah, good comments. Yep.
I just wanted to say that I think that he is one of the real differences that made this whole run possible this year. And obviously the defense, the improved secondary with Revis, but just from an offensive point of view, he helped out Tom Brady so much. So
agreed. Agreed. I think that's a very good point you make.
And being at the parade yesterday and seeing him and Edelman going nuts was fantastic. I hope we get to do it again in a year. But well, you know, thanks again for everything that you guys do, and hope to talk to you again in future shows.
You got it, Nick. Thank you so much for doing that and for listening. We have decided now to hook up with, and glad that we could catch up with for a final time here in the at the end of the 2014 football season, the one and only pro football guru himself, Russell Baxter. Mr. Baxter, how are you, sir?
Well, this Wilderness Ranger saw one hell of a game last week.
It was a pretty good game. Yeah, I just, you know, I mentioned earlier that I kind of sat watching the game, and I sequestered myself. It was just me and my girlfriend, and you know, because I had to go actually do some after game TV duties with a local station, and I have to admit, so I wanted to kind of get by myself and watch it so I could really, you know, agonize if I had to really, and try to look at it somewhat analytically. But I watched most of the second half with my mouth agape, because I wasn't sure what I was seeing until the very end, and then, you know, and then of course the jaw hit the floor, and I guess now that I look back at that, I say, wow, that's one hell of a way to spend an afternoon watching a football game.
Yeah, it's you know, naturally I've been asked where I rank it in terms of the Super Bowls, you know, me loving history the way I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it third of the 49 Super Bowls. I would say it's the third best game I've seen. And I've actually seen 46 of the 49, either on television or at the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Super Bowl 32 is still the one that I go back to, Green Bay and Denver. You know, the upset that it was, the snapping of the 13-game NFC winning streak. The game itself, it's still the only Super Bowl which both teams scored a touchdown in their opening possession.
Mm-hmm.
It was back and forth most of the afternoon, had the drama at the end, the Whirly Bird, Terrell Davis and his migraines. You name it, it had a little bit of everything.
Okay.
Second to me will always be, at least for now, the Super Bowl 13, which was the Pittsburgh-Dallas rematch.
Mm-hmm.
The first team to win three Super Bowls. It was the first ever rematch in the Super Bowl. It was the defending champion Cowboys against the Steelers. It was Swan and Stallworth. It was Jackie Smith. It was Hollywood Henderson. It was Terry Bradshaw. And so many Hall of Famers that they should have moved Canton to the Orange Bowl that day.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one. That was the was that the Lynn Swan catch over Mark Washington?
No, that's Super Bowl 10.
That was 10. That was 10. I got it confused.
Back and forth, 35-17. And then 35-31.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right. And the Cowboys.
Here's the funny thing, John.
Yeah.
For years I read about, well, it wasn't that close. Pittsburgh went into a prevent defense, and that's how Dallas scored. Dallas scored. Tony Dungy, of all people, bobbled an onside kick,
mm-hmm.
and the Cowboys got the ball back, and Dallas scored again, and then Rocky Blair recovered the onside kick.
Right.
But I remember reading and hearing, and I was a lot younger, so, you know, what's a prevent defense? So I had the opportunity to ask somebody who was on the field that day by the name of Jack Ham.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the Pro Bowl one year and spent about 45 minutes with him talking about football history and Super Bowl 13, and he assured me right from the Ham's mouth the Steelers did not play a prevent at the end of the game against the Cowboys. So Super Bowl 13, Super Bowl 32, and now Super Bowl 49. And, it, you know, when we go over some of these numbers real quick, you're going to be astounded at what you hear, because it was such an improbable New England win, and it had nothing to do with Malcolm Butler.
Okay, all right, then let's go. Let's start with that. Why specifically, as a good journalist would ask, why specifically did it have nothing to do with Malcolm Butler?
Well, obviously he made the play at the end, but the circumstances leading up to the entire game and in the game. And the numbers historically tell you, how did New England win that game? We know they lost the total yardage battle, which is not that unusual, okay?
Yep.
But, John, they had fewer rushing attempts, they had fewer rushing yards, and they had more turnovers than the Seattle Seahawks. That is the first time in the history of the Super Bowl that a team lost all three of those battles in the same game and still managed to win the game.
Wow. That's awesome. And I think I kind of knew that you were heading that direction, because I knew about the statistical, you know, edge on the scoreboard for Seattle in that one, and the Patriots did manage to win it. And sometimes it just comes down to, you know, executing plays, and certainly defensively the Patriots did a lot of bending, especially in those drives at the end of both the second quarter and the fourth quarter that almost cost them the game, but they ultimately didn't break.
That's what I do. And here's another thing that's very interesting. Tom Brady was, 37 of 50, right?
Yes.
37 of 50, 74%, 328 yards, 4 touchdowns, 2 picks.
Yes.
But the number interesting there, John, is 50. Now, just jog a second, and just think about any football game. How often do you see a quarterback throw 50 times in a game and win?
Doesn't happen often, does it?
No, it doesn't. And it was the first time it ever happened in a Super Bowl.
50 times in a win?
In a win.
Wow.
Brady was the fourth quarterback, but it was the fifth time a quarterback in the Super Bowl had thrown at least 50 passes. Jim Kelly did it twice. I don't have to tell you how those turned out.
Correct.
Dan Marino against the 49ers. Donovan McNabb against the Patriots.
Wow.
All four lost. Tom Brady, 50 pass attempts, wins the game.
Wow.
So you lost the total yardage battle. You got outrushed. You got out-attempted. You had more turnovers. And you threw the ball 50 times, and you won the game.
That's good stuff. That's really good stuff. And I guess I had not seen that. I've seen a lot of different things over the course of the last couple of days, but that's one I had not seen, and that's why we love you, Russell.
Well, let's even take it one more step further.
Good.
Patriots tied the biggest comeback in the history of the Super Bowl, which is only 10 points.
10 points, yes.
People would probably be surprised by that.
Right.
But it was the third time a team had fell behind 10 points in the game and rallied to win. The Broncos were up 10-0 on Washington in Super Bowl 22.
Mm-hmm.
And then before you could say not worst, it was 35-10 and eventually 42-10 with Doug Williams.
Right.
The Colts were up on the Saints 5 years ago, 10-0. Lost the game 31-17.
Mm.
Peyton Manning and the Saints to Drew Brees.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we saw what happened when New England was down 24-14 in the fourth and rallied to win the game.
Right.
The difference being, it was 10-0 Denver in the first quarter. It was 10-0 Indianapolis in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
The Patriots, the first team to do it in the fourth quarter.
Wow. So the first team to ever come from 10 points down in the fourth quarter to win it.
To win the Super Bowl. And wait till you hear this one. This is the piece de resistance, and I know you love when I speak French, Morticia. I have been keeping a stat all year. It's not an unusual stat, but I just wanted to see how it happened. John, in each of the first 17 weeks of the regular season, or each of the 17 weeks of the regular season, we had at least one game decided in which a team came back from 10 or more points and won the game. It actually happened 42 times during the regular season. There was one week it happened 5 times. So it really was kind of the year of the comeback. So then we came to the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, we have our first comeback, which was Dallas down 14-0 to the Lions, came mm-hmm. back and won.
Mm-hmm.
We had New England down 14-0 and 28-14 to the Ravens and won.
Right.
We then get to the championship game. Now we're down to 2 games. So the odds of it happening are getting slimmer. So lo and behold, Seattle down 16-0 comes back and beats Green Bay 28-22 in overtime.
Right.
So 20 straight weeks of at least one 10-point comeback. Now we're down to the Super Bowl, which means the streak ends if it doesn't happen. It didn't. So every game, every week this year, excluding the Pro Bowl week, sorry.
Yep.
We saw a team come back from at least 10 points to win a football game.
That is probably the most amazing fact or factoid that we'll talk about all year long. And I wonder if you've been able to kind of wrap your arms around that and what does that say about, you know, the NFL in 2015?
Well, it's a different kind of game. I think the fact that the ability to score with the passing game I know is very prevalent, but I also know that defense isn't played the way it used to. I mean, let's not forget, I know there's a lot being made about Pete Carroll's play call at the end of the game and throwing the pass and all that stuff. And I know Seattle was banged up, but bottom line was Tom Brady orchestrated a comeback against the best defense in the league the last 3 years
mm-hmm.
and did it in the fourth quarter. No one wants to seem to talk about it. They want to more talk about what Seattle didn't do rather than what New England did. And that kind of irks me a little because I'd rather spin it the other way. That was pretty incredible. And the thing in retrospect, I don't know how you feel about this, John. I might be making a big deal out of nothing. When we talked last week and I made my prediction and I said they were going to try to keep Seattle off the field with the running game of LeGarrette Blount, and obviously that was a swing and a miss.
Right.
It just didn't transpire. But, you know, here's a Seattle team known for its pass defense, known for his ability, you know, to get after the quarterback, maybe not as good as last year, but still. And from the get-go, Tom Brady kind of nibbled at their defense with short passes, with Vereen, with Edelman, with Gronkowski. They all, I mean, with Vereen, what, 11 catches?
Right.
Edelman, 9. Gronk had 6 or 7. You know, so a lot of underneath stuff. And here's my theory when it's all said and done. Is it possible, just possible, that New England wore out the Seattle defense with the passing game rather than the running game?
Sure. Yeah, that's possible. Absolutely.
Because when it was all said and done, now Brady threw a horrendous pass when he had somebody in his face, the one that was picked off by Jeremy Lane.
Mm-hmm.
He had a couple of others where he bailed out and so on. But by the fourth quarter, Seattle looked gassed on defense. And when it was all said and done, Tom Brady dropped back 51 times and was sacked once.
Right. That is
so
cool.
Almost as if they out-ball controlled them with the pass. And they this is my analogy to this. Now, I know Kevin will get the drums ready. In Rocky III, Rocky Balboa kept letting Clubber Lang swing until he got tired. And swung and swung and wore him out. He wore himself out.
Addiction?
I think that's what the Seattle pass rush did.
Right. That's right. That's absolutely right.
What you say, paper champion? I'm going to beat you like a dog.
Oh, I love it. That's good.
Nothing to that paper champion.
No. We love Clubber Lang references around the playbook. We definitely do. That's good stuff. Wow, Russell, that's awesome. That's absolutely great. Love it. Love it. I've tried to spend the last couple of days looking at it somewhat philosophically, you know, fourth world championship, you know, for these guys. And, you know, I guess the regime continues onward, even though the names have changed. The principle has stayed the same. They've stayed fairly, you know, true to that in trying to consider what they might do for the offseason in terms of, you know, bringing guys back and things like that. And it's pretty clear. And I'm sure that we'll have an instance or two where we'll want to criticize, even though we know better that we probably shouldn't criticize, because inevitably the Patriot way has been to stick to a game plan and, you know, and fiscal sanity, if you will, considering that, you know, there is a salary cap and things like that, that you have to follow rules that you have to follow, and you can't just go out and stack your roster. But the Patriots go about it in a certain way that has worked for them over an extended period of time. And I wonder if in future years, especially in the next couple, we still don't see more and more teams try to adopt what New England is trying to do. Do you think that's a reasonable estimation of what we might find from some of these other teams?
Well, I think there's already a team that has tried to do what New England does, and that's the Seattle Seahawks.
Yep. I think
they have. I think they've adopted the same philosophy. They've drafted guys in lower rounds that have paid off for them. They've gotten contributions. I mean, could you imagine if the MVP battle on Sunday came down between Malcolm Butler and Chris Matthews?
Yeah. To me, that was one of the things that made me chuckle throughout the entire second half. I mean, who the hell is Chris Matthews? We knew him as the guy that recovered the botched onside kick against Green Bay. And then Malcolm Butler?
Even more impressive was the fact that that man is able to do a show called Hardball. And still, I mean, listen, if you're going to give Mike Koulas for the Dolphins credit for doing 60 minutes, then you got to give Chris Matthews a nod for Hardball.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I'm sure that the Chris Matthews of the Seattle Seahawks has given Chris Matthews from MSNBC much more publicity than he ever realized was possible.
Oh, I'm sure. Is there any kind of kicker around the league named Morley Safer?
Yeah, really. There probably should be. In fact,
Morley Safer. It's kind of like saying Vern Den Herder.
Yeah, somebody like that, right? That's good.
I love this show. You digress before you even start.
We digress a lot, and we tell a lot of inside jokes, and we chuckle at them ourselves, and I think that's the beauty of it all.
Well, as Chris Berman and I often used to discuss, when doing prime time, and you know, those years were so much fun on Sunday nights. You know, we do this to amuse ourselves. If you happen to think it's pretty funny. Good for you.
Yeah, right, precisely. Then it's pretty funny. It works. That's all you need to do.
Did it work? Huh?
That totally works. It totally works. So now, what is your off season going to be like? Or I realize that you don't really have an off season. You've never had an off season from the days that we've known each other, you know, back at ESPN and the like. But you know, what's your routine going to be like now that there are no games to actively cover and talk about?
Well, I'm still going to be writing for Bleacher Report two or three times a week with free agency in the draft, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now a lot more active on another site that I joined about a month and a half called NFL Spin Zone,
okay,
which is part of the fan-sided family from SourceSI.com.
Mm-hmm.
I've been not only writing for them, but I'm also editing for them now, and I'm ecstatic about that. You get a chance to really contribute to something that's a really kind of a growing site. I'm probably doing about 25 pieces a month for them.
Wow.
Along with the Bleacher Report stuff, still some stuff from End Zone Score. And, you know, maintaining the ProFootballGuru.com site and maybe working on some new T-shirt designs. And who else? Listen, anybody wants to talk football and write football, I'm your guy.
That's perfect. Perfect.
And I mean that sincerely when it comes to you, John. 14 years, it's kind of hard to believe. I now believe that you and I are responsible for the Patriots dynasty.
Because we did start hooking this up right before they won their first one.
14 years.
That's right.
Super Bowl appearances in 14 years.
That's not a bad batting average. I think that'd be Hall of Fame worthy, don't you?
Yeah. Listen, I go to Canton every year. I'm hoping one year they keep me.
Yeah, really. One year you can hide in the bathroom for a while.
Yeah, Joe Horton, Pete Fairley. Hey. I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille.
Yes, thank you very much. We mentioned off the top of the program that for the first time, we're actually going to do some off-season versions of the playbook. We'll do a monthly show to kind of talk about what's current with not only the Patriots but around the NFL, and we'll do it once a month in the six off-season months until we kick it off in the season again. So perhaps for one or two of these, we'll find out your availability, and we'll see if we can't talk some football during the summer months.
Or maybe even five or six.
Whatever you like, brother. Whatever works for you is good for me. I just don't, you know, I don't like to look.
Now, I understand being a wilderness ranger that maybe June, July, and I might get stuck in the woods, okay?
Well, I'm going to try to stick myself in the woods during those months, but I am going to come out of the woods. I am going to come out of the woods for a monthly playbook, and if you happen to come out of the woods at the same time as I do, then all the better that we meet at the end of the trail.
As I say to my good friends and colleagues, I'm at your disposal.
Perfect. Sounds like a plan. Russell, thank you so much for everything you contributed to our program and everything you contribute to the enjoyment of pro football. It's greatly appreciated, and as we tell all of our listeners, make sure you get to check out Russell's stuff and support him high and mighty.
Well, I appreciate that. By the way, everybody who won a T-shirt should have gotten it by now. So, I mean, tweet your selfies out. Put on your shirt. Okay, they all but shipped about a week and a half ago. I think they finally got through the snow.
Nice.
I know some people, John, didn't get them for like 4 or 5 days, but to you and to Kevin and everybody associated with Patriots Playbook, thank you for having me on again. 14 years. There's only a couple of people I know that have tolerated me for longer than that. So, but it's a lot of fun. I think we have a lot of fun on the show. I'm determined to keep the fun in football. You know, sometimes we have to talk about stuff that's not pleasant. But somehow, you know, talking with you, we always seem to turn it into entertainment.
We do.
So I appreciate that. I appreciate your candor and your honesty and your support.
Perfect. Sounds like a plan. I think that should be our motto. We're keeping the fun in football. I like that. That works.
Absolutely. Well, I've got a new thing I'm working on. PFG stands for Pro Football Guru, right?
Right.
Well, PFG also stands for Passion for game.
Passion for game. I like it too. That works. I think you're gonna have a busy summer at the patent office.
Oh, absolutely. And I've always wanted to meet George Patton. I always found him fascinating.
Badoonch. And yeah, we digress, and I think that's a perfect way to.
We digress.
Yeah, we'll digress right into the off season. We will catch up very soon.
And I know this: the next time we talk, I already know we'll have a lot to talk about.
Oh, we definitely will. We'll count on that.
Yeah.
Russell, have a great spring and summer, and we will catch up soon.
you got it. Congratulations again to the Patriots and their fans.
Thank you. Absolutely. And I'm sure everybody will definitely accept that. Russell Baxter, make sure you get him, profootballguru.com on Bleacher Report, and check out the NFL Spin Zone site as well, that he is a daily contributor on online. All right, let's back to the phones. I got one more here that we need to jump into. Melvin in Tennessee. Hello, Melvin.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Great, sir. How goes it?
Man, how sweet it is.
Yeah.
It is. And last time I remember, man, winning a Super Bowl, watching the Patriots win a Super Bowl, I was at my friend's house in high school. And you could hear everybody tried to start to leave early, you know. So I went in, and I was at my friend's house, so I locked the door.
Mm-hmm.
I made sure everybody was going to stay in there and watch and feel the Patriots win. I remember that day like no other.
Mm-hmm.
And to have that happen, you know, 10 years later, like I said, it feels also good. And the story behind it, I've already seen the stories and, you know, the three wins and then the drought and then just the emergence again as champion. I mean, it's a lovely story. And I love stories from wrestling to watching soap opera, whatever it is. I love a good story and how sweet it is. For Tom Brady, just for him, just my childhood hero watching up with me when I was a little kid, when I was even getting into football.
Right.
You know, when there were no Titans around, there were no Memphis Grizzlies. Only thing Tennessee had was the University of Tennessee.
Right.
So that's the only thing we had. We still don't have a baseball team, but we won't get into that. I'm happy enough that we got the basketball team to watch and the Titans. Well, nobody watches the Titans, but still. With that being said, it's a dream come true for me. Like I said, just for me, just to sit up there and watch pure greatness and just the Brady and Belichick era just growing up. It's nothing. I mean, something like this could never happen again. Who knows? But I love it. You know, it was so sweet, John. I just, because just sitting there and watching the team, you know, take that ball and hold up that trophy, it just reminded me of my childhood. I just can't wait. You know, I just can't wait for, you know, I just can't wait to see what's going to happen. You know, this off season, and you know, off season is always a crazy time. There's something crazy going to happen. It seems like every off season.
Right.
So this is going to be a good time to, you know, get them. But this will be the first time where I'm not, you know, thinking about that nasty playoff loss like we did last year, man. We just get fired. You know, we just get fired with this. This one's going to be a sweet one. This is going to be a sweet off season. I thank you for everything you've done. You know, just sitting around there listening. Oh, my. It takes my mind away from, you know, just every day. Just sit back and relax and, you know, just really connect to the team, because being all the way down here, you, like I said, of course, especially it's hard to get good information.
Sure.
You do a good job for me, you know, all of you all.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Melvin.
Yeah. It does.
Thank you.
Well, never said that.
You are certainly a dedicated diehard fan, and rarely a week goes by that we don't hear from you at least one time on the program. So it shows me that your passion is certainly in the right place, and you always have good comments. And I'm very happy to have the chance to sit and talk a little football with people who are passionate about the sport.
Oh, no problem, John. John, thank you so much. We'll keep in touch. Go Patriots. Fourth Super Bowl, baby.
You got it, baby. All right. Uh-huh. Thanks, Melvin. Melvin in Tennessee. I have a couple of the comments that I want to read here before we wrap up the program today. One of our longtime listeners, Mary Beth, who's a Facebook follower as well, she says, awesome win. Cannot stop watching NFL Network. It is so much better when you know the outcome. Chills every time I see highlights or hear the sound effects. Happy to hear that we'll get a bit of the playbook over the offseason. I may get down there this weekend to see the trophy. Love the show and on to college basketball. Mary Beth, you said it very succinctly and very accurately for many of us, especially here in this area. So that's what we'll be doing. But it's always good to hear from you and have you during the course of the season contribute to the program. So I think that's really cool of you. Thank you for sending the note And thank you for contributing, as you do, to the program as well. We have a lot of people that have sent, congratulations. We have a lot of people that are, you know, thanking us for, you know, bringing the program to them again during the course of this season, our 14th year with the Playbook here on Patriots.com radio programming. It's great to be a part of an organization that thinks as forwardly as the Patriots do. They thought about streaming their own radio channel, if you will, years before, you know, Sirius XM even came into the mainstream consciousness of audio streaming on the internet. And doing our own radio station here has been something that was a lot of fun to be a part of, even back in the days when it was just us talking to each other. And realizing that it's not quite that way now makes it even more satisfying to be a part of this and to continue to grow it and to continue to contribute to it with you contributing as well along the way. And believe me, there's nothing better that we like than reaching out and having this kind of relationship with our fans and the fans of this football team and the fans of pro football, period. You know, you don't have to be a Patriots fan to really love and appreciate, you know, us talking about football, which what seems like 24/7 during the course of a football season. And literally, in a sense, it is. We welcome all opinions. We welcome all comers, whether you're a fan of the Patriots or you're a fan of another team in the NFL. This is all about, as Russell said just a short while ago, this is all about putting the fun back in football. And that's what part of our goal here is, especially in this particular program. And I know the PFW guys feel very strongly about that as well. And so that part of it is always really cool to be a part of. And I thank everybody that has taken the time to post on the Facebook page and commit to the friendship, if you will, in a football sense. And glad you're aboard, and we'll continue to post and exchange things throughout the course of the off season, whether you're a Facebook follower or whether you're a Twitter follower as well. And thanks to all the tweets. We did get the other winner who just tweeted a little while ago, Kev. Sean is his name. And Sean, what I want you to do, though, is send me a direct message or send me a private note or something. Or actually, you know what, Sean? Even better. Send your information, your mailing information, to Kevin, courtesy of webradio@patriots.com. So send him an email with your mailing information. We'll send you your prize for correctly predicting 28-24 in the Super Bowl. And that'll take care of it. So we had Sean and Miguel, who were the two winners in correctly predicting the Super Bowl score. So, Kev, this year we had four winners. We had two in the Miami week, and we had two in the Super Bowl week. And that's actually exactly what we had a year ago. We had four winners. I'm not counting myself, even though I correctly predicted the score.
You're always a winner.
Thank you very much. But that's what we had in the Miami game last year. So four winners last year, four winners total this year. And we'll see if we can't get at least four or more next year when we bring hashtag Prediction Thursday back again. So, Sean, thank you for sending the retweet and the screen save of your prediction. I got it right here, and I've also dug up the old one. So I'm verifying that you didn't fake it, which is pretty good. One of the few things I probably know how to do on Twitter anyway. That is going to wrap up the 2014 edition of the Patriots Playbook. But as we said off the top of the show, if by some chance you tuned in late, and those of you who are podcasting it later, you heard it off the beginning, but we will be back.
Yeah, we won't be gone for long.
No, we won't be gone for long. Starting next month.
Yeah, we'll talk to them in March.
We will talk to you again. We're going to do a once-a-month show, a once-a-month special edition of the Patriots Playbook, and we'll do it March, April, May, June, July, August. So that's six shows over the six-month off-season, and then we're right back into regular season mode the week before the Thursday night opener, because the Patriots, you know, will be in the Thursday night NFL opener this year. My money is on Pittsburgh as the opponent, because I think they're clearly the most attractive of the home games that the Patriots will have for 2015. What say you? You know, we'll probably build a show around it once the schedule comes out, right? But my guess is that first Thursday after Labor Day, probably be a Patriot-Steeler game that we'll be talking about to kick off the next season. It's been great talking to you. It's been great having you with us here. Like I said, if we didn't read all of the emails or the tweets or the Facebook posts on the air, trust me when I say this. I read them all. I look at them all. I answer as many as I humanly have possible time to do. Kevin knows this because he sees me sitting in here after shows for a half an hour more. And he says, why don't you go home? And I said, I still got things to answer.
Sometimes I think you don't know where you are.
Sometimes I don't. But I believe in that relationship. because we only have success when you're a part of the show. So thank you for being a part of it. And, Kevin, thank you for all of your hard work. You do a great job, buddy.
My pleasure. Look forward to getting back with you next month.
Yep, and we will talk about that. We'll get it out via social media. We'll post it here on the website as well when our first off-season edition of the Patriots Playbook will be. It will be in March. Until then, congratulations, Patriots Nation. You are once again world champs.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network. All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.